welcome to the Homeland Report, and this is our second episode. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today we are going to be looking at Switzerland. And I'm very pleased to welcome as my guest, Messerschmidt. Now, Messerschmidt has been on Radio Aryan before. He's been on a couple of programs on Truth Will Out Radio. And this episode is going to be devoted entirely to him. And hopefully we're going to learn about Switzerland, a bit about Switzerland's history, a bit about how much Switzerland has been invaded and changed by these foreign hordes, and gauge the sort of resistance there and how awake the public are, and basically just learn about Switzerland, really. So how are you doing today, Mr. Smith?
I'm fine, thank you, Sven.
Well, that's good, that's good. I'm very pleased that you agreed to make this, because you know, a lot of people are very shy of doing this. So obviously we're quite happy to keep people anonymous, and hopefully we will get more people. We've got two others in the pipeline at the moment, and if anyone else wants to do a homeland report, then they should contact stormersubs@hushmail.com. But let's get straight on with today then. Now, the main thing that I know about Switzerland, or that I've heard of with Switzerland being in the news, was the Jewish media got really excited and said, oh, well, Switzerland's turning neo-Nazi, it's anti-fascist, it's fascist, they want to get rid of all the refugees, all the immigrants, having a referendum, and they're going to kick out all the immigrants. And this was in 2014. Now, I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it says that all this referendum actually was to do with EU immigrants from the European Union, and not immigrants from outside of it. So this was sort of kicking out white people. This is totally different to the way it was portrayed in the media. Could you shed some light on this to start things off, please?
Yes. Well, the lies in the media are relentless, of course. I'm not surprised to hear that in the foreign press, in the English-speaking press, that it was described like this. This is, of course, very far from the truth. I'm reminded of what they said about Putin's law against homosexuality in Russia. They claimed that every homosexual will be locked up, and their houses will be raided and so on, when the law actually only says that it is forbidden to show gay propaganda material to minors. So that's what they made out of that. And it seems like they are in a similar lying mode again against this popular initiative in Switzerland that only wants to get rid of criminal foreigners.
That's quite a sensible thing to do, to get rid of criminal foreigners. I mean, you would think that that would just be basic common sense, that you don't want criminals in your country. But over here in Britain, when we try to get rid of criminal foreigners, they claim human rights law, and we have a hell of a problem just trying to eject them from our own country. Were you having a similar problem to that in Switzerland?
Yes, that's the exact same problem that we have here. There are these organizations and these political parties that will say this is against international law, we cannot do this, and try to bring up the most absurd reasons. But the law here is clear. The people, actually every Swiss citizen, has the right to initiate a popular initiative. If he is able to collect 100,000 valid signatures of valid Swiss citizens within 18 months, he can get this organized, and there has to be a vote on it, a federal vote. And a few years ago, this was done, and the initiative was called the Expulsion Initiative, in short or in full, the Initiative for the Expulsion of Criminal Foreigners. And the Swiss people accepted this initiative, voted for it. But what happened in the years since was that the Swiss parliament and the political establishment and system did everything to not enforce this new law. It was actually written into the constitution, this new law. And the initiative was organized by the Swiss People's Party, SVP in the German letters. Realizing that the parliament was refusing to execute it, then they then launched the new initiative, which is called the, in Swiss, it's called the Durchsetzungsinitiative in German. And that would be the enforcement initiative in English, which is a rather silly thing actually to have to do this, but it's designed to enforce the initiative that was formally accepted by the Swiss people. And this will be voted on at the end of this month.
So the people voted on this, they got written into the constitution, and then the government refused to enact it.
Yes, again, citing difficulties, international law, or whatever they will bring up.
Yeah, the human rights law, the supposed international law that that actually doesn't have any right to, there's no right to be in international law. Sovereignty comes under God, and it's given to separate nations, and it's actually given to the monarch, and that's where all the laws come from, and swearing an oath to God. International law was something that was brought in so that bankers could collect debts from other vanquished nations at war. It was specifically brought in so that the Jews could collect debts after wars. And it's all about humanity and being humane to people is a nonsense. It's internationalism, basically. And they use it against us, basically. They use it against these Africans that they wish to attack, like Gaddafi. They're going to try and use it against Bashar al-Assad, but you won't see Tony Blair or George Bush being taken to court, the international court, for these war crimes. But so they're saying the same thing to you, that it's outside international courts that are preventing you from kicking out these criminals. And we're told that this is all to do with the EU as well, but Switzerland's not actually a part of the EU. So I would have thought that you had more sovereignty than us, but yet you still can't kick out your criminal foreigners.
Yes, that's right. And all of this flies in the face of what Switzerland traditionally stood for: independence, sovereignty, and neutrality. So any foreign court or any foreign law to dictate to us what we can and can't do is actually very against what Switzerland used to be and what it should be.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing the main thing that I think people know about Switzerland is that it's always been neutral. It's kept out of wars. It's been neutral, and it hasn't been beholden to anyone. So without people really knowing, the Switzerland's sovereignty has been given away. And I suspect it was given away in small increments, like a small piece at a time, without the public knowing, the same as it's happened everywhere else. But what are the crimes then that these criminals have been carrying out? And has there been an increase since we've seen this recent invasion of asylum seekers?
Well, that is very hard to tell, because the newspapers and the TV press or TV media will do everything to hide that. But it's a good indication if in a newspaper article they mention no nationality of a perpetrator, you can be sure he's a foreigner. But if they say, if they do mention a nationality, then it's Swiss. Like saying a Swiss man robbed this store or whatever, then they will put the nationality in there. And well, we didn't have the complete invasion as in Germany. We didn't have these hordes of foreigners running amok through our streets. But for example, well, you all know certainly what happened in Cologne. And some similar things happened in Zurich on a smaller scale, but still. And the perpetrators were, of course, also North Africans, type of people. And just the other day, there was this case of a Syrian rapist that was in Swiss prison. And there was a migrant woman with a migrant background was working in the prison as a guard, and she freed that rapist, and they're now together on the loose. And it's almost funny to see how the newspapers are trying to play this down and not even mention that he was a rapist, just saying a Syrian escaped and was released by a female guard. In prison here, 75% are foreigners. That gives you an indication on how bad it is.
So the Swiss are very law-abiding people. So 75% of your resources, your prison resources, are going to looking after foreign criminals, and you've even started employing these foreigners in your services, in the civil services, and working in the prisons, and their loyalty is to the criminals, to the criminal foreigners. I think that really highlights the dangers of the diversity agenda, making them into police, making them into prison wardens, putting them in the army. I mean, their loyalties are not to the country that they've got a bit of paper saying that they belong to this country. That's nothing. They belong to the race that they come from and the nation that they come from. Now, I was looking at the figures for Switzerland, and it says that Switzerland is a population of 8 million, and yet 25% are foreign already. Is that a correct figure, would you say, or would it be even more than that?
Yeah, well, they will count everyone that has now a Swiss passport as Swiss, but they've made it so easy for someone to apply for the Swiss passport. It used to be that you had to be truly assimilated and integrated. You had to be in good command of the German language or the French language if it was the western part of Switzerland, or the Italian if it was the southern one. But they watered this down so much, so that if you can express yourself in a, well, half acceptable way, then you will be fine getting the Swiss passport. And if you have a wife, for example, or children that do, or any other relatives that do not speak German at all, that doesn't matter. They will then be receiving the Swiss passport with you, the whole family. That's the sad truth of it.
That's that's pretty much what it's like in Britain. And you're saying that the media is covering this up, and they're not telling the people of the nationality or the race of the criminals that are carrying out 75% of all the crimes in Switzerland. Well, is there any alternative media that are covering this, and do they try to shut down any alternative media that does attempt to cover what's happening?
Well, there are bloggers and the like, but I'm not aware of any larger organization or anyone that really has a lot of viewers or listeners. I am not aware of anything like that here in Switzerland. I'm sure they would crack down on any organization that would get influenced that way.
So you really have to rely on outside organization and outside reporting then. But in a lot of countries, especially like Germany, I mean, they're really clamping down on it. And especially in Sweden as well, they've made it illegal to actually say the race of the criminal if he belongs to another race. So Switzerland's government has turned against its people, the same as in the other countries in Europe. Now, you say you've got the Swiss People's Party, the SVP, and that's the main nationalist party that you've got there. Are there any other nationalist groups or organizations, or is there just that one?
Well, the SVP, I would hardly call them nationalist. They are conservative. Well, not even that, but they are the only party with influence that we have. It's actually the largest Swiss party, and they are the only ones that speak out against immigrant crimes and giving away our neutrality from the parties that do have some influence. But they are constantly attacked in the media, as you can imagine. And if I quickly mention the Swiss media, we have the Ringier organization, which is Jewish. The Ellen Ringier, who leads it, is Jewish. Then we have the Beobachter, which is the largest magazine here in Switzerland, monthly magazine. And it is owned by the Axel Springer Verlag, which was created by the CIA at the end of, after World War II, to keep the German population under control. And so, they are certainly not, being objective in what they write. It's quite clear what their philosophy is or what their orders are that they are getting. So yeah, the SVP gets constantly attacked in almost all of the papers and TV stations. And then we have the Swiss Democrats, which were slightly more nationalistic, but they also gotten this bad press, and over the years they gotten weaker. And then there's this really small party, the PNOS, the Party of Nationalist Oriented Swiss. But unfortunately, they haven't been very active in the last few years. I took a look at their YouTube channel the other day, and most of their videos are 5, 6, 7 years old. And the newest one I saw, I think, was 1 year old. So, but it is to be hoped that they are just reorganizing and will come out with some activity, like a protest or anything of that sort.
Well, you would hope so. I mean, that's really dangerous and quite a threat, I would say. Over 25% of the country has been replaced by foreigners already. But it's good to see that the Swiss People's Party is the most popular party, and hopefully they would get more nationalist as things progress, especially. Well, just with the extent that the people have been replaced, I mean, 25%, and that's a conservative estimate. I mean, that is really shocking. So, I mean, hopefully there will be more and more support for the Swiss People's Party, over the next couple of years. But what do you say that the most of the, television and the media organizations are run by Jews or by the CIA? Have you got laws on having a different opinion to the government? I mean, in Germany, if you speak out against immigration, you can be locked up. Obviously, if you speak out or you question some of the events in World War II, you can be locked up in Germany. Do you have similar laws to that in Switzerland, or is it not quite so bad yet?
Well, it's very bad. I don't remember the exact year. It was probably about 15 years ago. They launched the law, the anti-racism law. And, what it was is basically that, you cannot say anything bad about any, ethnical group, not put them down, not accuse them. And, well, there's only really one group of people that really have to fear being exposed. And I can give you an example of how that worked. The leader of the SVP at the time was Christoph Blocher. And he didn't counter this the vote on this law. He didn't work against it. And a few years later, in the mainstream media, in the NZZ, that's the new Zürcher newspaper, this Jew called Sigi Feigl, the leader of the SVP, was actually silenced by this leader of the Jews here in Switzerland.
Well, please go into that and explain what happened there.
Okay, so this Jew, Sigi Feigl, in a mainstream newspaper article, he described how he silenced this leader of the SVP, how he got the mission to do that. He doesn't mention who gave him that mission, but I think we can imagine. And so he met him in a restaurant, then basically, as he describes it, convinced him to not oppose this anti-racism law, which simply or basically states that you cannot criticize any ethnic group or say bad things. And I think it's quite clear what group of people this is supposed to protect and what people has the most to fear of being exposed or being talked badly about.
And he never spoke up against that. And have they ever used that law against him then?
I'm not aware of that, but the law did get enacted. And so now you cannot criticize any ethnic group. You cannot say, even if the things are true, you cannot criticize them. They will bring down the law on you if you do. And it also includes that you cannot deny genocide. You cannot say that it never happened. Anything that goes in that direction will bring the law on you, give you several years of prison.
Wow. And so basically there's a free pass. If you're an ethnic minority or from any of these privileged groups, you can do whatever you like, and no one can criticize you. And if they do, then they can claim that you're criticizing the ethnic group. Now, of course, the Swiss people obviously don't have any privileges like that, I'm sure. Well, do they have any of these hollow hoax idols? Have they put any of those up around Switzerland, or hollow hoax museums or monuments, any of that sort of thing? Because I know the, Switzerland wasn't really much of a part of the war. So have they put up any of these hollow hoax monuments anywhere in Switzerland?
Not that I know. I've not seen any of these, but the TV and the media are full of these Holocaust documentaries, as they call it. I wouldn't call them documentaries, but yeah, the propaganda for the Holocaust.
Even though nothing really to do with you during the war. What happened to Switzerland during the war, during World War II? Were there any National Socialist groups in Switzerland, or fascist groups or parties? What sort of went on there in the war? And were there Jews there at all? Do you know much about that period?
Not that much, but I do know that the National Socialists in Switzerland, or the people who were sympathetic to the National Socialists in Germany, were trying to form themselves and organize themselves. And a German came over from Germany called Wilhelm Gustloff, trying to help with the organization. And he was murdered by a Jew. And actually, the other day, there was I wouldn't call it documentary, but they talked about the Jew that murdered Wilhelm Gustloff, and what they did was basically saying that he was a hero, in other words. Incredible, I know, but that's the kind of city we live in here.
So they made out this murderer that murdered a foreign diplomat out to be the good guy, purely because he's Jewish. So they're twisting the history of Switzerland now to be pro-Jewish. Now, another thing that Switzerland's famous for is the banks. So I would expect there to be quite a sizable amount of Jews in Switzerland. I mean, they tend to go where the money goes. I mean, you've already said that they control the entertainment media and the most of the journalism and the news. Are there many of them in politics at all? I mean, and obviously they must be running the banks over there. What else are they involved in there, do you know?
I couldn't go much into detail. I don't know the names of the people that would be Jewish, except for some exceptions. Switzerland is actually governed by seven people, which is called the Bundesrat, or that would be federal council. And we did have at least one female Jew in that council. But it's sometimes not all that easy to recognize them as Jewish, because the names are sometimes, they are German sounding, but So there are some typical names, and in this special case, it was easy for me to guess because she was called Dreyfus, and that's a quite well-known Jewish name.
Do you know when it was, when the Jews first came into Switzerland? So you're saying that the Jews first came there in medieval times, and that's what you've got records of, and that they've been expelled from a couple of cities. So do you want to just go into that for us, please?
Yes, I do know that they were expelled from Bern and Zurich, which are the two major towns in Switzerland. And in Bern, it was that they were accused of having ritually murdered a boy. And there's actually a statue in Bern, which is quite famous. If you want to look this up, it's called the Kindlifresser statue. And I spell this out. It's Kindlifresser. And it shows a man or ogre that is eating children, and it is wearing the Jewish hat that the Jews had to wear in medieval times, so you would recognize them from afar. But as in other countries, over time they came back and maybe influenced the, if there was a change in leadership, maybe they bribed, or I don't know how they did it, but after a while they were, or people just forgot about why they were expelled in the first place. And so gradually they came back. And about 200 years ago, there were only two Jewish villages allowed in Switzerland, and the Jews had to live there and could not live anywhere else. But then in the 19th century, a law was made that granted them the exact same rights as the Swiss citizens.
Now, the emancipation of the Jew, that came about after the French Revolution. And once they were emancipated, they could then hold political positions, and that's how they've managed to infiltrate and take over all our institutions. So you had a settlement that they had to stay on. So it's like, that's the Pale, isn't it? Beyond where the phrase beyond the Pale comes from. Something's incredibly immoral or pornographic or offensive, then the phrase is beyond the Pale. And that comes from beyond the Pale, meaning the settlement where the Jews were. That was called beyond the Pale. So there's been this link with corruption and subversion from the Jews for centuries. It's even parts of our language in the very phrases that we use. So I also noticed that Lenin was in Switzerland during World War One. So he must have felt safe there. There must have been a Jewish population there. But did you ever see much of communism around that time? Did the communists ever try to stage a rising in Switzerland at all?
Well, it's not easy for me to answer that question, because there were uprisings of workers in that period, and some of it was probably organized by communists, but workers did have a legitimate reason to rebel, because working conditions were so poor for the workers, as everywhere in the world at the time, I would say. But I don't know how much of a role the communists, the actual communists, played, and what part was just a legitimate workers' movement to demand higher and acceptable wages.
Right.
And on Lenin, I know that he was here in Switzerland, and there were several communist congresses where they met and decided on strategic decisions and so on. And some Swiss were involved in this. One Swiss man then even went to Russia to help with the revolution there, but I don't know too much in detail about that.
Right, so you would have thought that there would have been some resistance to this, to the communists and trying to cause problems there. And then you had World War II, and Switzerland was neutral, but it got bombed by the Allies, apparently. I heard the Allies bombed three three cities, but you were shooting down some of the Allies and also some of the Germans. So you did manage to remain neutral without actually getting occupied by the Allies, because our other countries that remained neutral were occupied by them in their attempts to shut Germany off from the outside world, from what I can make out from it. Well, that's the reasons that they say why they went in there. Well, let's go back a little bit further into the history then, and some of these founding myths, because there's quite a famous character that's associated with Switzerland, and that's William Tell. Do you think he was a genuine character, or do you think he was just a mythological character?
I think he did exist in flesh and blood, but this is very hard to substantiate. What I can say is that the historians that are invited to the media here, they will do everything they can to undermine any myth that would inspire the people. This is actually very very clear if you would just listen to some of these programs here in media. Maybe I should explain a bit about the history of Switzerland very briefly.
Yeah, please do.
All right. The Celtic tribe of the Helvetii lived in what is now Switzerland, and they were conquered by the Romans. And the Romans then settled in that area, and there was some mingling of the Roman and the Celtic population. But when the power of the Roman Empire waned, Germanic tribes began to settle in that area, most notably the Alemanni. And in the western part of what is now Switzerland, they were came under the influence of the Burgundians, another Germanic tribe. And both of these tribes, however, and that territory came under the rule of the then expanding Frankish Empire. And these were, of course, also a Germanic tribe, the Franks. And their most famous ruler was Charlemagne, that most people know. And after Charlemagne's death, however, or rather after the death of his son, the empire was split up into three parts among the grandsons of Charlemagne. And this meant that what is today Switzerland became Middle and East Francia, until they were reunited under the Holy Roman Empire of Germanicus at around the 1000. And speaking of the Holy Roman Empire of Germanicus, few people probably know that this is what was the First Reich. Everybody has heard of the Third Reich in Germany, 1933 to 1945. But in my experience, hardly anyone knows why it is called the Third Reich. The Second Reich would have been the German Empire of 1871 until 1918. And so in the 13th century, the core regions of what later formed modern Switzerland were granted Reichsfreiheit, which literally translates to imperial freedom. Keep in mind that they were part of the Holy Roman Empire. But it is called imperial immediacy in the English-speaking world. And what this means is that they did not have to answer to any local feudal lords, but only to the emperor himself. So that did grant them some kind of independence, except from the emperor himself. And in 1291, the Federal Charter, or Bundesbrief in German, was signed by the leaders of these regions, which were also called Waldstätten, or forested cantons. And they swore an oath to each other of eternal alliance, to help each other in times of war or need. And from then on, these united people were known as the Eidgenossen, which in English translates to oath brothers or fellows of the oath, which is still used today. Swiss people sometimes still call themselves Eidgenossen. And in later years, there were tensions and even open war with the House of Habsburg, who wanted to diminish the sovereignty of the Swiss people. And they wanted to gain control of the strategically important region where the Swiss lived. And this led to the Battle of Morgarten in 1315, where the Swiss, numbering about 1,500 men, defeated the Habsburg army of 5,500 infantry and 2,500 heavy cavalry. And they were commanded by Duke Leopold I of the Habsburgs. And then there was a similar battle in 1386, again battling the House of Habsburg, this time under the command of his grandson, I believe, the Duke Leopold III, the Battle of Sempach, in which the Swiss, again, even though heavily outnumbered and facing a state-of-the-art knight's army, which was even supported by professional mercenaries, they defeated them. The Swiss numbered around 1,400 and were very poorly equipped, while the Habsburgs numbered around 4,000. And in this battle, the Swiss had losses of only about 200 men, while the Austrians suffered around 1,500 casualties, including 600 of their noblemen, and indeed the Duke Leopold himself.
Which one was the one with Arnold von Winkelried? Was that one of those battles that he was involved in?
Yes, that was the Battle of Sempach. And he's said to have, the Swiss were facing these pikemen, these Habsburg pikemen, forming a phalanx that was nearly invincible. And so this Swiss man took several of these pikes with his hands and put them into his body so that there would be a gap in the phalanx that could be exploited by the Swiss to invade the ranks of the Habsburgs.
So he gave up his life so that the others could win the battle. I think you've got a really good example there of white people working together. These oath brothers, all these tribes making an oath to work together and defend their territory. All Germanic tribes, but all different tribes all the same. This is a really inspirational history that you have here, Schmidt. I'm sorry to interrupt. Please do continue.
Very well. So the outcome of the battle was completely the opposite of one would expect looking at the numbers and the equipment of the opposing armies. And the Swiss attributed this miraculous victory to the grace of God. They built a chapel at the site of the battle and celebrated a yearly mass there in thanks for the victory that was granted to them. And these and similar victories in battle led to the reputation of the Swiss being invincible in battle, which lasted a few hundred years. And this in turn led to the fact that they were very much sought after all over Europe to be employed as mercenaries by various nations and princes. And in 1506, Pope Julius II first employed the Swiss Guard. And since they were the only troops never to desert the Pope, never to abandon him, even when faced with very unfavorable odds in battle, they were kept in service and they served the papacy and the Vatican to this day. You may have seen pictures of them with their traditional Renaissance uniforms with a halberd, but they use modern weapons these days, of course, because they are the bodyguard of the Pope, and at least one attempt on the life of Pope John Paul II it was. So they do have modern weapons these days.
So it was a reputation of being absolutely invincible from the Middle Ages that led to the Pope picking them for his army, because they fought off such huge amounts of highly advanced, technologically advanced armies of the Habsburgs. Well, the Habsburgs, we learned in the last episode that they sort of took over Hungary. They seem to be quite keen to build empires, and Charlemagne as well. But the Swiss managed to stand in their way, and because they were united against that threat, you've managed to stay united ever since. And you're also one of the only countries to have an armed population. You insist on the population being armed. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, every Swiss citizen should serve in the army. There are exceptions for health reasons and objections of the conscience for pacifists. But most Swiss men serve in the army, and all of them get to keep an assault rifle at home.
So if the race war starts in earnest in Switzerland, then the people are armed and they will be able to defend themselves.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, that's good. That's definitely positive. And just to go back to what you were saying there about the Alemanni, the descriptions of them, they were the same as the Angles and the Saxons and the Anglo-Saxons that came over to Britain and the English. So the Swiss are a similar racial stock, or the same racial stock, as the Anglo-Saxons in England are. I was reading about that in the Races of Britain book. It's interesting that you have a strong sense of Christianity and being part of the Holy Roman Empire and supporting the Pope with your army. So at what stage did the Swiss people become Christian then? Do you know what year that was, or roughly what sort of time?
That's an interesting subject. I again cannot really talk about this from a situation of having studied this or having great knowledge, but actually it was an Irish monk, if I'm not very much mistaken, by the name of Gallus, which founded a monastery in Switzerland. And the town is still called Sankt Gallen, which is Saint Gallus. So actually we were Christianized from the British Isles, or from Ireland.
I've heard of Saint Gallen. I think that would have been... That might have even been before Augustine. That would have been the Celtic Christianity that preceded the Roman Catholic Christianity. So that would have been a long time back, before Charlemagne, I would have thought. Would that be right?
Yes. Again, I'm not too sure about this, so nobody quote me on this, but I think it was the 5th century, more or less. And Charlemagne would have been around the year 800.
Yeah, that's right. So the Swiss were united to fight against these enemies in the past, and yet the enemies of today, they seem to be a little bit divided, because that referendum that you had, or the popular initiative, that was almost 50-50. It was only a slightly more that were anti-immigration than were pro-immigration. So do you have a problem with liberals over there? Is there a lot of political correctness that goes on? Do the liberals obviously the liberals are going to be having more of a voice than in the public sphere than the more nationalist minded ones. But among the public and the people that you talk to, is there more support for liberal values or more support for conservative values, would you say?
I will get to that in a moment. Can I just briefly return to the history so we can sort of close that part?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, in the year 1515, there was the Battle of Marignano in Italy, and the Swiss had actually expanded into parts of Italy by conquest with this reputation they had, and yeah, quite aggressive and conquering territories. But in Marignano in Italy, they were faced with the French army under Francis I, King of France. And the French had 72 pieces of artillery with them, huge cannons, while the Swiss had none. And the Swiss nearly won that battle, but the bloodbath created by this artillery was so bad. And then the Venetian allies of the French arrived, and that sealed the defeat of the Swiss. And that bloodbath has apparently made quite a lasting impression on the Swiss, because that was the point from when on Switzerland was never gone to war against external enemies again, and where the idea of neutrality was probably inspired. So getting back to the part of the liberals and the media, yes, political correctness is everywhere in the media. You cannot really speak openly. The programs on TV are all directed in that way, towards political correctness, and to the point that people are really afraid of saying something against migrants. I mean, you know this in England, I'm sure, because I've heard of the Rotherham case, where I believe over 1,400 children were raped by Pakistanis. Yeah. And the reason given by the people who were in the know was that they were too afraid of being called racists. And it's similar here.
It's the same problem there. Well, this is why it surprises me. When I look Switzerland up on Wikipedia, it says that the last country to give women the vote at the federal level was in 1971, and the last canton to give women the vote was in 1990. So you would have thought that you were a really conservative country that placed a lot of value on traditions. And it sounds like you've placed a lot of value on traditions. You haven't been to war for 500 years. You honour your ancestors. William Tell is a famous ancestor, and these battles that you've had that form part of the history of the nation and the founding myths of the nation, and these tales of courage, fighting against overwhelming odds and giving up your life so that your kinsmen can continue fighting and win the battle. And yet just since the war, you've become politically corrected and people are afraid to speak out. And looking at this giving the women the vote, I mean, the last canton, that was 1990, so it's 26 years ago. So it was only 26 years ago when the country was still fairly conservative. So this is quite quick that the country has changed. It must be quite a shock to the older people there, I should imagine, and what they see happening around them. Have they started diverting the money that should be going to the old people and should be going to looking after the Swiss? Have they started diverting that to the immigrants yet? Because this has been a big feature just recently in Germany.
Yes, I'm sure that is being done, because I've read reports about the so-called asylum seekers being housed in villas with swimming pools, complete with swimming pools, and in hotels, very expensive hotels. While on the other hand, you read reports about poor Swiss being denied the most basic allowances for food, or people who are handicapped are not able to get a pension anymore. I cannot clearly connect this to any sort of law. It's just an impression that I get from reading reports. And of course, what you mentioned earlier, how the Swiss people have been changed, this has taken decades of relentless propaganda in the media to bring this about. Even in my lifetime, let's say 30 years ago or 40 years ago, it was inconceivable that homosexuals would be allowed to have a registered partnership, or would be allowed to adopt children. And there's also this homosexual propaganda, of course, and this has changed in my lifetime. And Yeah, it's not hard to imagine alienated older people must feel about what this society has become now.
And try and say it's progress, and they're being progressive. Yeah, when they do that, but that has been one of the quickest changes. I can remember 20 years ago, homosexuality was seen as a negative thing. You didn't want people to turn homosexual, and everything was done to prevent that. And all the education materials would say things like, "Oh, if you're going through adolescence and you have a crush on someone of your own sex, don't worry about it. It will just be a fad, and you'll return to normal in a few months." Whereas nowadays, they tell the kids to go out and experiment and go and find an older man to experiment with, and tell them the mechanics of what they should be doing. So rather than it just being a fad, the kid ends up being scarred for life, either ends up feeling suicidal at what they've actually done, or they end up just becoming a complete hedonist and pushing things to the limits until they die of AIDS or some other homosexual-related disease from taking drugs. Everything really has become distorted. Now, I see this as being a process that really began with the emancipation of the Jews. And when the Jews were made equal citizens, then they were able to take part in public life. And that's when they took over public life. As I was saying earlier, this is where this phrase from beyond the pale comes from. Just that phrase in itself tells you where all this corruption and subversion and perversion and demoralization, where it comes from. And the same thing is happening to every country in Europe, as just hearing from you, Schmidt. The same thing has happened in Switzerland. You've gone from being a highly conservative country to one that's promoting homosexuality and refusing to do what the people have instructed their representatives to do with this popular initiative, and are just allowing people to come in from all over the place to move into the country and call themselves Swiss. What has actually been the amount of asylum seekers that you've got there? Because I should imagine that you'd probably get a lot of asylum seekers, because Switzerland is a wealthy country and they target the wealthiest countries. Have you had a big problem with asylum seekers, or have they been a little bit more honest and said that they're just after the money and they're trying to get work there?
Well, the current situation is that the amounts of asylum seekers has increased very much. There are tens of thousands more asylum seekers every year. One of the problems is that even those that get denied asylum simply stay in Switzerland, and they sometimes burn their passports or any identification paper. So it's not even possible most of the time, or at many times, to say what nation this man or this woman came from, and to bring them back there. And there's also this tendency of the political system to just ignore these people once they have been denied asylum, and even give them social security money. And quickly going back to the spreading of homosexuality and pornography, some years ago there was a program on Swiss TV that was advertised as the dangers of pornography, and that was probably to attract people to watch it. But once you watched it, it was basically all about, yes, pornography is here, and we just have to learn to live with it. In an ad for that show, they made it seem like it was critical of pornography, and they mentioned that so many children now have pornography, hardcore pornography, on their smartphones. But if you then watched the emission, the show, the message was basically, yes, pornography is now here, and it's here to stay, and we just have to learn to live with it, instead of any angle that would contrary to the problem, or fixing the problem. It was just all, we just have to learn to live with it. And that's just typical of the kind of media programs that we have here. I did listen to the Hungarian Home Report with Berg, and he talked about how the Hungarian population was completely flooded with pornography and shocked. And with us, it was more gradual than with them, I guess. But the effects are the same, the demoralization of the people and being distracted, not being alert to what is really happening.
I think when they say things like, oh, the dangers of pornography, and then they make a program that's pro-pornography, this isn't just in the media. They came out with a law that was supposed to be a law against usury. And what that was a law that legalized usury. So this is something that they use. They claim to be against something, where in actual fact, what they're really doing is promoting what they're claiming to be against. I see this a lot in the policies of the government. I'll say, like when they say they're trying to prevent immigration into Europe, so they're going to give Turkey lots of money and give Turkey visa-free entry to Europe. So how is that going to prevent immigration? But that's what they say. That's what they're doing. That's how they're going to prevent immigration. It can't all be incompetence. Well, we know it's not incompetence. We know who's behind it. And as I say, I think that's all due to this emancipation of the Jews.
Yes, I agree.
It's so clear, and hopefully this series is going to help confirm that for people. Well,
it's also. Do we still have time for something?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. The pornography issue. It's quite easy to find out who controls the pornography industry, and that, of course, is Jewish people. And some of these people have actually made statements, which you can even read in Jewish publications, where they say that their reason to create pornography is one of the main reasons is that they hate Christianity and they just enjoy perverting Christian women and seeing them in these porn movies. And until recently, I thought sexual revolution was a term coined by some hippies in the U.S. in the 1960s. But it's actually a book written by a Jew. So, and whenever you trace back where these things come from, you find Jewish people controlling it. Yeah, that's just what I wanted to say.
It's like Mike Delaney said, well, whatever rock you pick up, underneath it you'll find a Jewish lizard or serpent underneath every rock that you pick up, hiding there in the shade. And it's true, whatever you look into, whatever corrupting thing it is, whether it's bank loans or pornography or drugs, anything, the music industry, rap music, prostitution, you find that there's a Jewish link there. I think one of the first conversations we had, Schmidt, was about the language, the Yiddish language, in fact, the German language and the German criminals language. And all the phrases in it for criminal acts were Jewish phrases, which just shows you that it was Jews that were involved in the criminal underworld. Because why else would people have these Jewish phrases for things? Why else would they call a jemmy bar after Moses? It was because Moses parted the waves, tapped a rock, and the rock split open. So they called this bar the Moses bar because they used it for breaking into houses. And there's lots of words that they use that all have a Yiddish origin. Is written about in the Jew as criminal. I forget the name of, there's an actual word for it, for these criminals speak. Do you remember what that word is?
Yes, I would actually encourage people, as the phrase is somehow used often, but don't believe us, do your own research. And this criminal language is called Rotwelsch. And you can even find an article on Wikipedia on that. Even in the English, it's called Rotwelsch. It's the gangster language that is almost entirely made up of Hebrew and Jewish words.
Well, if you don't need any more proof, we really don't need any more proof than that, to be honest. I'd like to sort of finish on a positive note. I think the positive note that we can finish on is that the Swiss people do have, every household has a gun, and it's there to defend the nation. And you've fought off all your enemies in the past, and despite the fact that you speak different languages, French, Italian, and German, you're all united as the Swiss people, which I think is inspirational for the other white nations. I mean, I think the way that the English and the Welsh get on, I mean, there's rivalry, but there have been atrocities in the past, but there's rivalry between us. But we do get on as being British, and the Swiss all get on with being Swiss and have loyalty to the other cantons, which I think is inspirational. Is there anything you'd like to say before we finish this podcast, Schmidt?
I realized that the English mix of people is actually very similar to the Swiss mix. As you said, you have these Germanic tribes, the Angles and the Saxons, and some Viking influence, and then you have the Celtic influence, and it's the same here. The Helvetii were the Celts that lived here, and then later mixed with the Germanic tribes. And I would like to say that I do have hope for Switzerland. I think Swiss people are decent people, basically, but they have been so misinformed and misled by the media. So that is the main problem. If people only knew what is happening and realized it, then I think there's a chance the old fighting spirit could be rekindled.
Well, here's to that, and hopefully we all see that happen in the next couple of years. Okay, well, thank you very much for agreeing to make this podcast, right, Mr. Smith, and thank you very much, listeners, for listening, and look out for more Homeland Reports in the future.
You're tuned into